Eamon Lillis walks free from Wheatfield prison after serving 5 years for killing his wife, Céline Cawley.
After he departed Wheatfield prison, Eamon Lillis travelled to Dublin Airport, where he declined to answer questions put to him by journalists who had followed by car.
The blanket coverage of Eamon Lillis's release has been much commented on, not least in relation to how some media followed him on his journey to Dublin Airport and on a flight to Southampton, recording his every move and utterance. To their detractors, it was a perfect example of over-the-top tabloid coverage. To supporters, it was an antidote to po-faced broadsheets which lay claim to the moral high ground while secretly wishing they could push the boundaries the way their red-top colleagues do. To talk about the role of tabloids in Ireland, we're joined by Mick O'Toole, crime correspondent and assistant news editor at the Irish Daily Star, and Michael Foley, lecturer in journalism at Dublin Institute of Technology's School of Media. Michael Foley, I suppose as good a jumping-off point as any is those two big stories we've seen recently, the Eamon Lillis release and the Graham Dwyer verdict, both covered in a range of different ways across a range of different titles. How would you feel about how tabloids covered both of those stories?
Yeah, I think the Dwyer case and the Lillis case are two very, very different cases. But in a sense, I suppose, that when you look at some of the press, they're covered as if they were very, very similar. And one instance I saw that the, I think it was the Sun, referred to Eamon Lillis as evil, a term or a word I would think should be reserved probably for Graham Dwyer. So in that sense, when you look at what we call tabloid newspapers, you sometimes find, you know, they there's no room for nuance, that you find that the words used are always definitive. They use superlatives if necessary. They use lots of adjectives, and in a sense, it doesn't leave any room for subtlety or anything. And I think in those two cases, you can actually see that one case hadn't much room for subtlety, and the other one probably did. And I think that the coverage of the Lillis release was probably, although obviously people would disagree with this, was probably a little bit over the top for what it actually was.
In what way?
Well, I think the following him all the way to Southampton, the going to knock on the door of his sister and all this, and I'm not entirely sure what public interest is served by that.
I'm just going to bring in Mick O'Toole on that point. Public interest, that's a phrase that you often see thrown in your direction, Mick, and I know you have some strong views on that.
Who defines public interest? Public interest is entirely subjective, and it seems that it is merely the elites and Official Ireland that use the phrase public interest. When I'm out and about, when I was talking to the taxi man coming here today, he didn't mention public interest. So I think we should just be basically left alone, and we can write what we want within the law and within other restraints. And essentially, if people don't like my product, they don't buy the product. So we live and die by the market every single day, and public interest is something that I will leave to academics. And I very much rule against that. But just getting back to Eamon Lillis. The release of Eamon Lillis was the main story on the RT 61 News on Saturday evening, right? It was the most read story on the Irish Times website. On the Sunday, it was on the front page of the August Sunday Times. So every media organisation was involved in Mr. Lillis. So it's okay, in that sense then, it's okay for RTE and the Irish Times and Sunday Times to go to the prison and for him to be released. But then the public interest stops then. This man killed a woman while he was having an affair, and he got away with €1.3 million in his back pocket now that he's released. If you were to go down the public interest route, I think there's a significant public interest in that, but I think there's also a significant interest to the public.
The coverage of Eamon Lillis' release, it's clearly in the public interest in that,
but
it shows.
But why does it stop? Well, when he comes out
of
prison.
Well, it actually, it does, in a way.
Because whether he,
had his pretzels on the plane or not, which I think was in one of the papers, in fact, he didn't.
Don't buy the paper if you don't
Next day. I wouldn't normally, other than I have a professional responsibility to actually read a lot more papers than most people. So I do read the newspapers, and I do read that which may not be in the public interest. And I do look at stories about celebs, and I sort of, and then say, tut, 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 that shouldn't be there. Yes, we all do that. There's nothing wrong with that. But the point about it is, you're pushing the responsibility onto the reader. You're saying it's only you. But in fact, it's not, because the decisions about what's in the newspaper rest with you and your colleagues. And what I read what's dished up to me.
I think it's more complicated than that.
Oh, it is complicated.
I think it's in my case, it's not public interest and it's not commercial. It's will people be interested? And that comes from 20 years experience.
The fact of being released is interesting. But the fact he got onto a plane and went to... the story could be told without following him all the way, without knocking on his sister's door, involving her in the story.
I'm happy to discuss this. A door knock is a completely legitimate form because we have to give him the chance to say, yes, I do want to talk, and no, I don't want to talk. And there's nothing wrong with that. One of the most seminal door knocks, say, in the last 40 years in Irish journalism was that of Gordon Wilson. After the Enniskillen bomb, yeah. When the RT reporter went up and knocked on that man's door. Fundamental to journalism. Knocking on Mr. Lillis' sister's point, door was fundamental to journalism.
The point for journalists, and this is the real existential dilemma for journalists, there are very few rules. Journalists don't live by rules. Doctors do, lawyers do, all sorts of things. Plumbers do. Journalists have very few rules. Mm-hmm. They try to put in place rules. They put in codes and say, oh, I hope that'll work, and it doesn't. And so journalists, in a way, are condemned to trying to work out how they are going to report the world around them every day they go into work.
Michael Foley, historically, one of the real features of tabloid journalism was campaigning. We don't really seem to see that as much now as we used to. Does that suggest maybe a change of tack?
Yeah, I mean, Mick's going to accuse me now of sort of harking back to a mythical golden age. But there clearly was a time when tabloid journalism, and we are talking more about British tabloids, possibly Sunday World, actually, at times, especially Northern edition of Sunday World. But we are talking about campaigning, and tabloids were really good at campaigning, particular issues that they would take up. And that seems to have gone. What might be seen as a tabloid agenda, I think it's got much narrower than it used to be. But I think that the media generally has become quite narrow. And I think it's very difficult, if you wanted to make a distinction necessarily, other than in presentation, between, the news values of the Star and the news values, say, of the Irish Independent.
What do you mean specifically, though, in terms of how the agenda has narrowed?
Well, I think that the agenda is more or less around crime, sport and sex, and especially when sex overlaps with crime and sport. I think that there is a fear amongst all the media, but I think maybe especially amongst tabloid, of what's coming down the line in terms of digital technology, because it seems to be taking over what we might have seen as a tabloid agenda, where you got cheeky presentation of news, where you got a lighter presentation. But I think that, in a sense, the technology is attacking it in, I think, far greater extent than it might be attacking broadsheets.
Mick O'Toole and Michael Foley, thank you very much.